When I was a little boy, there were four men who made up the total masculine influence in my life. It was my daddy and three of his brothers. My dad was number 8 of 13 children. He was born in 1901. And right in a row in the middle of those 13 children, there were four boys. There was my Uncle Moody, my Uncle Harry, my daddy, and my Uncle Frank. In total, they were only 5 years apart. And then on either side, they were bracketed by both space and sisters. So those four were inseparable. In 1909, they were having a family reunion, and a traveling photographer came through the mountains. My granddaddy got him to take pictures of the family, and he took one picture of those four boys posed together. Uncle Moody and Uncle Harry were the older ones. They were standing up in the back. My daddy and Uncle Frank were the younger ones. They were sitting in two little chairs, and Uncle Frank, the baby, was holding a little stick in his hand. Well, all through the years after that, about every 20 years, they would pose again in that position and have their picture made. And in the last picture, when they're all in their 60s, my Uncle Frank has replaced the little stick with a walking cane. Now, they were all those four brothers, they were all in their 40s before they ever married. My dad actually met my mother when my dad was 44 and my mother was 25. And so when I was around my dad and all of those brothers, I was with ancient wisdom. It was like living with time machines. Because in their stories, they could take me back to a world that I really shouldn't be hearing about firsthand. Their father, my grandfather, was born in 1850. Just my grandfather. And I would hear all these stories about living in a world in which, as they would tell me, the only thing they had to buy was salt. Everything they eat, everything they wear, everything they live in, they made it all. Well, I would love to go visiting all those brothers. We would go see my Uncle Moody. He lived down in Leakesville, North Carolina. And I remember one time we were down there, he and Aunt Rebecca had no children. But they lived in a little neighborhood with lots of children. And he thought he needed to teach those children about rural life because they'd grown up in town. So one day he said, come with me. And we went into town and we bought two big bales of straw. And then we came by the grocery store and we bought 2-quart bottles of milk. And we got back to his house and went back to the edge of the woods behind the yard, took all that straw apart, and we made a big nest on the ground, a big nest that was about 6 feet across, and put the 2 bottles of milk in the nest. And when the children came home from school in the afternoon, he went running outside and said, children, come quick, come quick. I found a cow's nest in the woods. A big cow has made a nest, and it's been laying milk in the nest. And we went running back there, and sure enough, there was the cow's nest, and she had laid 2 bottles of milk. And every day they would come to see if she laid more milk. And one day, she had laid a bottle of chocolate milk. And there was a big debate about how that happened. And a little girl finally popped up and said, I know. That's the kind she lays in the dark. Well, besides laying milk, my Uncle Moody also had a chewing gum tree. When it would bloom in the springtime, out of all the cracks in the bark, here would come little curled up sticks of chewing gum. Some people said it looked like a black locust tree, but it wasn't because they don't have chewing gum. And the kids coming up and down the street could always come up and harvest from the chewing gum tree. Then we would go see my Uncle Harry. Uncle Harry was a mechanic and later a Chrysler Plymouth dealer, but he loved to make things. One of his fingers had the end kind of cut off of it, and something had happened, and what was left of the nail was like a little unpopped kernel of popcorn. And he would say, you want to know what happened to my finger? And I would always say, yes. And every single time, it was a totally different story. One time a rooster pecked it off. One time it got bit off by a shark in the Mediterranean Sea below Florida. One time it got chopped off by the fan blade in a car. If he had had 1,000 fingers, he would have lost them in 1,000 different ways. He had built something he called his robot. It had feet made out of buckets. It had legs made out of stovepipes, a body out of a galvanized trash can, arms out of stovepipes, its head out of another bucket, bug lights, yellow bug lights for its eyes. And its mouth was a radio speaker. He could let it on little wheels roll down the slope from his car dealership to the street and intercept children who were walking home. And he could sit in his office, and he had a little microphone. He could look out the window and talk to those children through the little speaker that was the robot's mouth. And you know, that robot knew whose rooms they were in at school and who their parents were and where they went to church and sometimes trouble they'd been into. They could not believe how smart that robot was. They would get so caught up in conversation, finally he would have to pull it back in so they could go on home. And then we'd go see my Uncle Frank. My Uncle Frank lived on the farm where my daddy grew up, and now he was a dairy farmer. He would do all kinds of things. One time we were sitting on the front porch, and a car that was lost, a car with a Florida tag, came down the dead-end road. Uncle Frank always milked about 50 cows, and you know, if you ever were in dairy farming, when it's time to milk, the cows, because they need to be milked at equal times each day, the cows always bring themselves in the same order to be milked. Because if you milk 50 cows, if one comes in the front in the morning and at the end in the afternoon, whoa, it's swelling up by another hour by the time it does that. Well, this car drove up from Florida, and people wanted to know how to get out of there because they were lost. And Uncle Frank said, well, you go back up the road, but let me show you something. He said, I got a dog that understands speech. They said, really? He said, yeah, I can tell it to do things, and it'll do exactly what I tell it to do. They said, no. He said, watch this. He turned to his dog. He says, okay, it's time to milk. So I want you to go over here and get the cows. And what I want you to do today is, I want you to bring Spot in first. And then I want you to bring Sarah in second. And then bring in Charlotte after that. And bring them in the right order. Line them up to bring them in the right order. You know, that Charlotte's got those two spots on her side. And he went on and described all these cows. And that dog took off and it started barking. And sure enough, it lined every one of those cows up just exactly the way he had told it to. And it came in there. Well, my daddy was as tricky as the rest of them. He worked at the bank in town. And I remember in kindergarten, we went on a field trip to the bank. And we got in the bank, and my dad said to me, you want to do it? I said, yeah. And I said to all the kindergarten kids, you know, my daddy works here. If I ask him, do you want him to show us where he keeps the money? And they said, yeah. And we went back in the big Mosler vault, past all of the safe deposit boxes to where there were bars in the back. And we looked through the bars, and there were cloth bags with coins and flat canvas containers with currency. And while all those kids were staring through the bars, my daddy and I slipped out of the vault, closed the door and snapped it, and turned the lights off. And listened to them scream and scream and scream and scream and scream with our kindergarten teacher standing there laughing because he had done this before with her class. And then we finally let them out, and my daddy said, now, that's what I do to every robber who comes in this bank, so you better not be one. There never was a robber. My daddy scared it out of everybody when they were little, yeah. Well, one day I was at band camp in the summer, and when my parents picked me up, they said, we're not going home. We've packed your clothes. Last night, your Uncle Harry had a heart attack and died. We're going straight to Leakesville to the funeral. And we got there, and I remember sitting with my mother and my brother in the second row while my daddy and Uncle Moody and Uncle Frank sat with Aunt Zula and her two cousins of mine in the front row, and they just automatically left a little space for where Uncle Harry was missing. And even as a 16-year-old boy, my whole sense was more than one person has died. A part of all four of them has now gone. It was about 4 years later, and I was off in college when the telephone rang again. I answered the phone. It was my mother. She said, "I had to call because your daddy just couldn't call you. Yesterday afternoon, your Uncle Moody went to inspect a house. In retirement, he was working for a real estate company. He didn't come home, and when they went to look for him, he had had a heart attack and died. Can you just come meet us for the funeral?" And I drove back up to Eden, North Carolina, and again sat with my mother and brother on the second row. While there sat my Aunt Rebecca, they had no children, with now my daddy and Uncle Frank, half of the boys were gone. It was 5 years later when the telephone rang again, and it was my daddy calling this time. You could hear tears in his voice. He says, "It's Frank, it's Frank." My Uncle Frank had gone out to the barn to milk the cows, and when he didn't come back, my Aunt Kathleen went to look for him, and he had had a heart attack and died in the barn. And I went to the mountains for this funeral. It was just my daddy sitting with my Aunt Kathleen. Now, not just his two older brothers, but his younger brother, Frank, had also died. So it was a surprise, but not a surprise, when 2 years after that, I was awakened at 5:30 in the morning with the telephone ringing, and when I picked it up, I didn't have to say, "Who is this? Do you have relatives you know so well that you just have to hear their voice and you know who it is?" I knew it was my cousin Kay on the phone. She just said, "Donald, it's your daddy. He just didn't wake up this morning." I said, "Where's my mama?" Kay said, "They took him to the hospital anyway, and she's still there. But I told her I would come home and call you so you could get a head start. I said, we'll be there as soon as we can." It was before cell phones. I had to wait till it was decent to call people to make arrangements to be gone for a whole weekend. And when I put the phone down, I walked into the next room. There in that next bedroom was our four-week-old firstborn child. And that's when it